Joining me in the studio, as promised, I've got Angus Kennedy to answer some questions on nature. Angus, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
I've heard you on John's show numerous times, but I've never actually met you, so it's a pleasure to meet you.
And likewise, it's great to meet you. Yeah.
So we're talking about birds in particular today, molting birds, and what are garden birds up to at the moment?
Yeah, I often get asked at this time of year, as the dawn chorus starts, starts in February, March really, and the birds are singing more and more, the breeding season's really getting going, and it peaks around about May and into early June. But at this time of year, it seems as if there's a silence. You'll hear birds chirping, and of course they communicate by cheeping and chirping all year round, but they're not singing, or most of them aren't anyway at least. So people often ask, well, what's happened to the birds and where have they all gone? But ironically, even though they're quiet now, there's more birds now than any other time of year, because of course all the chicks have fledged, all the ones that have managed to successfully get out of the nest, they're all in there. And we've often talked on this show before about the importance of hedgerows. The birds are relying on the hedgerows. The hedgerows are our nature corridors. They link up all the various different habitats. And all those baby birds that were born in your garden or in the woodlands or near you and their mums and dads are in the hedgerows right now. And they keep their head down, and it's an important thing for them to keep their head down, especially for the parents, because they've had a tough breeding season. They've had a busy year culminating with the breeding season, and their feathers take an awful battering. So right now they change their whole coat of feathers.
Okay. And is that what, when just the term molting birds?
That's exactly it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it takes a little bit of time, because of course they still need to be able to fly. They still need to be able to defend themselves by escaping and forage for their food. So it's a good time of year to do it for them before they face into winter. They'll have a nice new suit of clothes, and there's an abundance of food, and there's a huge amount of growth. There's plenty of places to hide, because they don't shed all their feathers at once, but little bit by little bit, over a period of 2 to 3 weeks, they change their whole suit of feathers, and so it means they're not quite as good at flying, so they're able to keep their head down in the hedges.
Uh-huh. And in the garden, I do actually feed birds myself. I have a few feeders out.
Lovely.
And some people say not to leave out the seeds during the summer to let them forage for themselves.
Yeah, that used to be the thought. And then people used to think that maybe they'll choke on the peanuts, the baby birds, if they don't know. Or they could just get a bad habit of always going to the sweet shop in your garden and not going and learning how to forage for themselves. But no, that's not the case. The parents teach them how to forage. They'll supplement their diet with the bird feed that you have. And in fact, studies have shown that if you have them all year round, well, of course, you'll have more birds in your garden all year round. But also, they'll pick away at the caterpillars and things that are on your vegetables, or they'll pick away at the caterpillars and the bugs that are trying to eat your apples or your plums or whatever, if you've those kind of things. So your fruits that are coming out soon as well. So they'll help you out. They'll do you a service. If you help them, they'll help you back.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And of course, they have to try to escape from the cats. I have a cat as well as a bird, and it's sometimes a problem to try to keep the cat from chasing the birds. You know.
Yeah, and cats are great, and I'm very fond of cats, but they do, unfortunately, they're one of the biggest dangers for our wild birds, for the small wild birds all over the world, not just here. And there's huge amounts of them can be killed by the cats. So it's one of the reasons that it's important to try and have your bird feeder somewhere where there's cover nearby, and have them out of reach of the cats. But also have your little wild places. Leave your little wild bits of the garden. Leave bits of the garden that aren't cut. Leave the hedgerows alone if you can at all until the wintertime. And that'll provide shelter for them and provide them a little bit of an escape from cats and from other predators like sparrowhawks and things like that.
Uh-huh. So swallows and house martins, are they the main birds that you would find in the gardens at the moment?
The swallows and house martins are the ones that are still breeding now. Mm-hmm. And there's a few others. There's a bird called the yellowhammer, which is unfortunately in severe decline. But the yellowhammers we still have them in Donegal, we're lucky here, and there's a few others are still breeding, but the swallows and the house martins just keep going and keep going. On my house right now, I've a nest of house martins, two nests of house martins actually, with chicks in right now. I can hear them all night. They attach themselves to the side of the house. They make the little mud and the little mud house, and they attach themselves on with that. Whereas the swallows, they go inside, they go into a barn or into a shed. And I've actually a little nest of swallows at the moment. I have a camera on it. It's amazing watching them. But it's a perilous race for them because it's quite late in the season. And the chicks only hatched there about 4 or 5 days ago, so they're very small. They grow incredibly fast, but they have another 2 weeks really in the nest. Mum and dad hoovering up all the midges and the other bugs around your garden and feeding them to them. But they need to grow and turn into a fully mature swallow that's capable of flying within the next couple of weeks, because a week or two after that, they'll all be gathering together in a big flock and they'll be heading south to South Africa with all the challenges that faces, including the Sahara Desert. Quite amazing to think, really, that these characters that you see swooping around your garden now in another few weeks are going to be heading off into Africa.
And it's amazing to think that birds so small can make their way from here to Africa.
It's phenomenal, really. You'll sometimes find the tiny shells discarded. The mums and dads, they throw them out of the nest after the chick has hatched. And throw them a good bit away to not give any signs for predators. But the size of the top of your thumb, if you look at your thumb and you look at your thumbnail, that's the size of the egg that the little swallow or the house martins come out with. Mm. And then 3 weeks later, that bird is as long as your hand. It's amazing stuff, fully feathered. And mum and dad look after it for only about 2 weeks. They help it to feed. They teach it how to feed. After that, it's on its own. It's amazing how fast these things grow.
So they don't have very much time to be self-sufficient, if you like.
They don't. It's late in the year now. And they're dependent on, it's been awful wet in August. We didn't have a bad summer up to then, but it's been a wet August. And of course, that's not great for bugs. Mm-hmm. So mums and dads the parent swallows and house martins are struggling to get the feed. And if there's enough food available, they'll grow and they'll do well, and hopefully they'll thrive and be strong enough to go. But if there's not, then they could be in bother.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And this time of year is a good time to see bats.
It is. Bats are wonderful creatures, and such important creatures, such a huge kind of keystone part of our ecosystems, of our nature. And there's bats everywhere. Most places you'll go in Donegal, you'll encounter bats if you know where to look and how to look for them. But of course, they only come out at night. They're afraid of us, they're afraid of the sparrowhawk, they're afraid of so many other little predators. They're tiny. Irish bats, most of them would fit inside a matchbox if they folded up their wings. They're very, very small. But they eat a huge amount of bugs, so they're really important part of the food chain and managing our pest control effectively. But this time of year, it's getting a little bit later. The days, sorry, are getting a little bit shorter, so it's getting darker earlier, so it's more accessible to go and see them, and so they'll be coming out that wee bit earlier. And of course, their young are out. Their pups have all emerged at this stage. So particularly if you go down to somewhere where there's a river and there's some still water in the river, you'll very often have a good chance. If you went down, say, about 9:30 tonight now, went down with your torch, you'll see the Debenton bats, most likely. Certainly around where I live, around the Melton area, there's plenty, but an awful lot of rivers that are surveyed, and there's a big national Debenton survey, it goes on in August. A huge amount of our watercourses have these Debenton bats, and they just fly back and forth over the top of the water, scooping bugs off the surface of the water and from around the area, and they're mesmerising to watch. Mm-hmm. And they're fascinating. They'll eat thousands of bugs in one night, each bat.
Okay. Yeah. So the Debenton bats are the ones that are most common around?
Debenton bats. Oh, the bats always have funny kind of names. The Debenton bat is often called the water bat, and they'll roost in bridges. It's one of the reasons that bridges are protected. And they'll stay to the water. The other bats will sometimes swoop over the water, but be more typically in the hedgerows. And they'll follow the lines of the trees. It's another reason to leave your hedgerows intact and leave the trees to become mature, because the bats will follow those lines. And if you cut down that line, they'll get confused and they won't know where to go.
And the poor bat isn't a very popular species. You've got all these stories about bats getting into your hair, bats getting into your house, and things like that. And it's old wives' tales, is it?
It is completely. I've never had anybody say to me that they've had a bat caught in their hair. But lots of people say they know somebody who's had it, but nobody's actually been able to say it's happened to us. But they can catch thousands of bugs in the dark with their incredible echolocation, which is how they shout. And they listen for the sound that comes back. But they shout at a frequency we can't hear, thankfully, because they shout very loud. But by doing that, they're able to catch little bugs. And if they're able to catch all those tiny bugs, they're not going to crash into my big head, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And they do. They've been much maligned, I think, just because they're a mysterious thing that comes out at night. Mm-hmm. But now scientists are studying them for all sorts of reasons. They're studying them for potential Alzheimer's cures. They're looking at them for potential cancer proteins. They're looking at them for the rate that they regenerate skin after being cut and this kind of thing. They're amazing little creatures. And they've been around for over 50 million years.
And you're actually giving a talk on bats tonight in Dunfanaghy, am I right in saying that?
I am indeed, yeah. Mm. The Dunfanaghy Tidy Towns group have kindly asked me to come along. So they're a great bunch there. They're a very active group who are looking after their area and their environment. And they are hosting a bat talk tonight in the workhouse in Dunfanaghy at 7:30. 7:30 this evening. There'll be a talk for about an hour or so about what bats are and why you should care and the rest. And then we'll go out with our little bat detectors. Hopefully we'll find some. It looks like it might be a rainy night. The bats don't like the rain, much like ourselves. Mm-hmm. But hopefully we'll find some.
Uh-huh. And another thing that we're going to talk about today, Angus, is the Himalayan balsam, the invasive plant.
Yes, and thanks. It's great to have an opportunity to talk about this, because Himalayan balsam, it's one of the invasive species. And people might have heard me talking about invasive species before. And we hear a lot about Japanese knotweed these days. Because mm-hmm. Japanese knotweed, if it's in your property, can cause all sorts of problems. But Himalayan balsam, it's a pretty looking thing. But it outcompetes all of our native plants. The bees love it. So it's good for the bees, but we shouldn't have it. And if you have it in your area, you should really try and get rid of it. And it's very easy to control. It grows up to about 2 metres tall and it has these kind of helmet-shaped little flowers. In other countries, it's actually called the helmet flower. But those little flowers, they can make, once they're pollinators, they can produce up to 800 seeds. And those seeds, they're fired off by a little trigger mechanism, which is quite incredible, really. And they'll all be coming into seed now in the next few weeks. And they fire off. So if you touch off the plant, it'll shoot out these seeds up to a distance of 7 metres. Quite incredible. And they spread those seeds, and those seeds then will grow into next year's flowers. This year's flowers will die off. The problem with them is they tend to take over our native vegetation, especially along watercourses. If you have a damp ditch at the end of your garden, and most of us have one of those, if along the stream or the river, they'll spread along there. The seeds can survive in water very well. And they kill off all the other vegetation by just outcompeting them. So then once they die back in September, October time, that leaves the bank weak because the network of roots that would have been there from our native vegetation tends to disappear. And of course, the native vegetation, which has sheltered and fed so many birds and bees and bats, etc., is gone. You can pull them up very easily yourself. The root system is very, very shallow. So you'll see, I have it up on the website, and I was saying to Caroline, I think she might share on the Facebook, a picture of Himalayan balsam. If you can correctly identify it, pluck it out. There are a few other flowers, purple or reddy kind of flowers at the moment, but the Himalayan balsam is quite distinctive. 2 metres high, big, wide, long leaves with a slight serration, and you can pull it up terribly easily, and you'll be doing a great service for your own garden, for your own wildlife.
So in spite of them being good for bees, the overall picture is that it's not good for the garden.
Yeah, it's not. It's much like the rhododendron ponticum. Is bees love that too, but it's also disastrous without shades. So often things, and it's part of the reason that they spread, is because they fit in with bees. Mm. And of course, they're not native to here, so there's nothing controlling them. There's no bugs eating them or keeping them down.
And just when you were talking about the Facebook page there, you were just saying before we went on air, Angus, that there's a Green Schools Facebook page now that's...
The Green Schools is a wonderful organisation, and Donegal were one of the very first counties in Ireland to take up with the Green Schools. Green Schools in Ireland is the most successful Green Schools programme in the world, and we should probably trumpet that a bit more. It's called FEE, it's run by the Foundation for Environmental Education internationally, and it's called Eco Schools in other places. So in the north you'll see the green flags, they're called Eco Schools, but it's the same system. We've more take up and more participation in Ireland than any other country, which is wonderful for education, our young people, and it's all thanks to the teachers and thanks to the good work of the schools. So Green Schools this year have set up a Facebook group for teachers who are Green Schools coordinators, or any teacher that's interested in the Green Schools programme. You can go onto Facebook, go onto the Green Schools and join that group. And it's a private group. It'll be just for teachers and coordinators and, of course, for Green School staff. And they'll share various different resources and be able to help you out. Because there's a wonderful bunch of staff up in Dublin and a few scattered around the country as well. And they're good people, you know.
Okay, the listener has a question for you here. Nest of wasps in the attic. Will the wasps interfere with the bats?
The wasps won't. No, they'll keep away from each other completely. They won't bother each other whatsoever. And sometimes it can be quite an off-putting thing because those nests can get quite big. But around about now, they'll have stopped reproducing. So you won't see any more baby wasps coming out. You won't see you shouldn't see the nest getting any bigger at this stage. And it'll be abandoned quite soon. The new queens and males will come out soon. They will breed, the males will die, the new queens will go off and hibernate in September, maybe early October time, and they'll abandon the nest, and the nest will never be used again.
Okay. A busy man, Angus, and before you go, you're doing a lot of talks and this week on Nature Northwest. We mentioned the one in Dunfanaghy today, but Kildaff, Glenveagh, Ards Friary, the Donegal Bank Walk are all happening.
Yeah, the Waters and Communities group are a great group. They're a branch of the County Council and they're spread out throughout the county, and we're lucky we've a man called Jimmy McVeigh in Donegal. He's based in Donegal Town, but he organises all sorts of great activities to try and help communicate around nature and water courses and water systems. So I'm collaborating with him and we are doing a few walks. We're doing a walk in Kildaff at 2 o'clock tomorrow. At 2 o'clock tomorrow, we're meeting at the beach car park, the one with the football pitch. Okay. And we're going to walk from sea to land, exploring the habitat around there. The next day, we're doing biodiversity by bike. which we did last year as well, and that's going to be in Glenveagh. It's going to be great fun. That's 11 o'clock and we'll hop on a bike and we'll scoot along. We'll be able to cover a big distance and we'll stop and explore some of the amazing habitats in Glenveagh. Now that needs to be booked. The others don't, but that needs to be booked because there's very limited numbers of places on it, and the information is on my website there. And the following day then, the 22nd, we're meeting in Ard's Friary Car Park at 2 o'clock and we're going to explore through the woods, coming out then down into the sea and the river estuary there. And then the very last of those walks is the Donegal Bank Walk. 12 noon, we're meeting at the bridge in Donegal Town and we're going to explore their bank walk there. That's in conjunction with Donegal Tidy Towns Group as well. There's a great active Tidy Towns Group. So we're so lucky in Donegal. We've all these amazing different habitats and you can go to all these different places. They all link. They're similar nature, but they're very different in their own way.